So because this is the summer, there's no bar bat mitzvah this week, and we have a fairly intimate group. I can tell you a secret that I know you won't share beyond this small circle and everybody who listens to the sermon on the web. As you know, each week I send out a short drasha, usually a couple of hundred words, and it also contains the title of the sermon. And this week, I took some advice and retitled the sermon, and I'd like to tell you what I originally intended to call it, although I may be euphemistic. I ended up calling it Two Donkey Tales, because I'm going to tell you two stories about different donkeys. But you see, as you'll find actually in the translation in front of you, Balaam's donkey is not called a donkey. It uses the older English word, which I will allow you to check for yourself. So I happened to mention to our good and wise president earlier this week that I was planning on titling the sermon Two Tales, but not with donkey in the middle. And Kurt said to me, "Rabbi, use donkey." So I would like to publicly thank him because I have avoided one controversy this week that I probably didn't need, and I'm going to tell you the same stories anyway. The donkey tale that you know, that we read this morning, that you're familiar with, is, of course, that Balaam goes out to curse the people of Israel, and his donkey all of a sudden lies down and refuses to move. And at first, Balaam is enraged and begins to hit him so severely that the donkey says, "You're going to kill me." Let's leave aside the fact that the donkey can speak. That's another question. But finally, what is revealed to Balaam is what the donkey already knew, which is that there's an angel of God standing in front of the donkey, and that's why he's not moving. And there are lots of ways to interpret that story, but I would like to actually interpret it in light of another parable that involves a donkey from the Middle Ages. This one is a parable of the Christian philosopher Jean Buridan, who was actually writing as a theologian to make fun of philosophers. And he said, imagine there is a donkey who is trapped equidistant between two bales of hay. It's exactly the same amount of distance to the right and to the left. And now the donkey, imagine, has been trained by our philosophers, and therefore he knows that in order to live a successful life, the one tool that you must use is the tool of reason. So he's trying to reason. Does it make more sense to go to the right or to go to the left? But because he's trapped exactly in the middle, he can't actually find a good reason to go to the right or to the left. And so the donkey dies of hunger. Now, what Buridan was pointing out is that although people believe they can live by reason, it's an illusion. That in fact, something has to precede your reason. You may reason about your values, reason about your dreams, reason about your hopes, but you can't start with reason. All the things that we assume about life that are tangible and rational and measurable and quantifiable, they all actually come second. What Balaam didn't realize was that something that he didn't see could be real. He didn't see an obstacle in the road, and therefore there couldn't be an obstacle in the road. But in fact, this is directly contrary to the greatest teaching that Judaism introduced to the world. Remember that when you look at the civilization of Egypt, you see a civilization of what is tangible. Pyramids, sphinxes, even the realm of the dead. You may know that in Egypt there's a city of the dead. where there are buildings that are really graveyards. A mummified body is an attempt to make death tangible, to say that what you see is real. And what is it that Israel was taught as they emerged into the desert? That which you cannot see, which you cannot touch, which is intangible, is the greatest reality, and that which is measurable and tangible is ephemeral and passes away. That was the lesson. Why did Israel build the golden calf? Because they didn't believe in that which they couldn't see. They had to make it something that they could see. Remember, when does Israel build the golden calf? When Moses goes up the mountain. As long as they had Moses, a physical, tangible representative of God, they could go with it. As soon as Moses is gone, they need something they can point to. And when God reveals God's self, what medium does God use? The medium of words, which are intangible but powerful. You can't really see a word. You can see marks on a page, but you can't see a word. And yet, it is by words that we understand God's will in this world. And so what Judaism sought to teach is exactly the lesson that Bilam needs to learn. It's the lesson that Emerson said was the first and last lesson of religion, that the things that are seen are temporal and the things that are unseen are eternal. That's why when Bilam at first is told by God, don't curse the Israelites, what does Balak say to him? I'll offer you more money. And Bilam changes his mind. Because money is the symbol of tangible goods. And Bilam lives in a pagan world where everything must be made tangible, must be made seen. And along comes his donkey and teaches him the lesson of that which you cannot see. I bring this up not only because it is the lesson in part of the parsha, but because it is the most powerful lesson for a society that is blessed beyond the greatest dreams of our ancestors with what is tangible. And it is, in fact, the intangible that we have to reclaim. In some ways, the progress of our society is a progress of the march of what you can see. That, after all, is the glory of science. We learn more and more about the physical nature of human beings and the physical nature of the world. And we, as people of faith, have to continually stake out our claim for that part of the world that can't be measured. As the surgeon Richard Seltzer said, the surgeon may see the patient's brain, but he cannot see the patient's dreams. And we, the Jewish people, we're the ones who introduced to the world the idea that which you couldn't see was ultimately greater, ultimately more important, ultimately more real than the things you could see. When Moses comes down the mountain with the tablets in his hand and he shatters them at the foot of the mountain, commentators argue about why Moses would do such a thing. How is it that he could take the products of the hands of God, however badly the Israelites were behaving? He's holding something that God carved, and he shatters it at the foot of the mountain. And Arnold Ehrlich, who wrote Mikraki Pshuto, gives a beautiful answer. He said, what Moses saw was that they were worshiping a calf of gold. And he thought to himself, if the Israelites are worshiping something they made, imagine what they will do when I show them tablets that were carved by God. I don't want them to worship anything physical, so I will destroy it. In other words, even things that are made by God, the heavens, the sun, nature, ought not to be worshipped by human beings because they're tangible, because they're physical, because the things that are seen, as Emerson taught us, are temporal, and only the unseen is eternal. That's a tale of two donkeys. It is a lesson that he's actually central, not only to us, but to our children, who are surrounded increasingly with the seductions of the seen, with that which they can touch, manipulate, with what is called, with unconscious irony, a virtual world, which is another way of saying a not real world that seems real. So that you can meet people on the computer, but you never really know them, because you don't know the unseen part, the sense of a person when you look in their eye, the feel that you get in their presence, the things that you can't measure, but are most real. And we come together on Shabbat to pay obeisance, to give homage to the things that we cannot see, to the world that we cannot touch, to the God whom we can only feel. And we know that not reason alone, nor sense, will bring us to God, that something deeper and higher, imagination, intuition, awe, humility, dreams, love, all the things that you can't touch, all the entities that are intangible. From the time of Bilam to today, they are in fact what matters most. In a world drenched with the seductions of the seen, we have to remember that there are angels in the path. And just because you cannot see them doesn't mean they aren't there. So stop. Feel their presence. Know that unseen and untouched, there is a God in this world. And we carry the banner of all that cannot be seen, but all that can be known. That's why ultimately, when Bilam looks at Israel, he praises them, because he knows that what he sees is just a small part of the blessing of all that is. Shabbat Shalom.